This is our second day of oral argument in Las Vegas. We were here on March 25th. We're very happy to be back and doing this again. And welcome to all of you. I'm joined here by Judge Jerome Tao to my left, Judge Abby Silver to my right. I know counsel, I'm sure, know the two judges from Clark County. I'm Michael Gibbons, and I'm very happy to be here too. Our next case on this morning is Merlino versus State. It's case number 65273. And we have Ms. Bells and Ms. Baharov. And the court received this morning appellant's supplemental authority filed, of course, by Ms. Bells or presented by her. Did you receive a copy also, Ms. Baharov?
Yes, they were kind enough to email me a copy yesterday, so I did receive it. But I would note for the court that I did not have an opportunity to file supplement, so I wouldn't be asking for time to do that.
Okay. How much time would you like?
Tomorrow?
Well, that's pretty fast. We appreciate that. So the supplemental authorities may be filed. The court did say in its order setting oral argument that we wanted counsel to address People versus Davis, the California Supreme Court burglary case that has some similarity to the case today, and that case is mentioned in the supplemental authority, so we're actually happy to have it. All right, we're ready to go. Ms. Bells, you can present the opening argument. There was no reply brief filed, so normally there would not be any rebuttal, but we'll see how it goes.
Pursuant to Nevada Rule of Appellant Procedure 34, I was going to ask leave of the court to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Why would that rule apply?
That rule indicates that if an appellant does ask permission of the court, even if reply has not been filed, the court may grant permission.
All right. Permission granted.
Chief Judge Gibbons, Judges Tao, and Judge Silver, counsel for the state, my name is Jasmine Spells. I'm with the Clark County Public Defender's Office. I represent Carrie Merlino. Ms. Merlino never entered the Easy Pond located at 821 North Rancho. Thus, the burglary conviction cannot stand. The sliding tray is not a structure, so it cannot be entered. Furthermore, placing items in a sliding tray does not constitute an entry. I want to talk a little bit about this sliding tray. It has a glass on top and a tray underneath that slides out to potential customers at the drive-up window. The sliding tray is operated by the employee inside. It must be pushed out to the customer and pulled back in by the employee. The tray is open to the front side to allow for items to be placed in. When you're going to a CVS pharmacy to pick up some prescriptions, you drive up to the drive-thru window. There's a little tray there. There's a glass on top. The tray is going to extend out to you for you to put your card in, whatever information you need to put in. And then the person on the other side has to pull the tray back in.
It's actually, in the Davis case, is very much like the other side of the CVS drive-thru. One side's a chute and one side's a tray, yet it's the same, obviously, CVS. And going to that, why should this court construe the entry of the forged check through the tray into the building where the cashier's inside? Why isn't that sufficient to meet statutory and common law requirement for entry to sustain a conviction for burglary?
At common law, they're required a breaking. Now, under our Nevada revised statutes, there's no longer a breaking. But the rationale behind the rule is still the same. A breaking is creating an opening so that you may enter. Simply placing items on a sliding tray does not create an opening. Furthermore, the rationale behind the criminalization of the burglary statute is to prevent danger and harm for any individuals who would come into a business, to protect people in their homes, and also to protect the business's possessory interest in their items and their goods.
We certainly changed that from dangerousness in any store, such as a Target. If you walk in, if you're uninvited, which is exactly the question here, you're not necessarily an invited guest if you're going to enter with the intent to steal, and certainly that's been changed.
I agree that that has been changed, but our Nevada law still requires an entry. If we look at First Judicial Court, or Smith versus First Judicial Court, 75 Nevada 526, our own Nevada Supreme Court held in that case that placing your hand over an open bed of a truck was not an entry. We can liken that case to the facts here. The testimony in this trial does not even state that Ms. Molino ever placed her hand on the tray.
What's the principle? What's the reason this is not a burglary? And one of the reasons, in our earlier said in this argument, one of the reasons you cited the Davis case out of all the burglary cases out there is it's got really interesting discussions about the whole history of the burglary statute going all the way back to, like, the Magna Carta, basically. It's a really interesting case. And you talk about all the different tests. In this case, the instruction that was given, instruction number 23, is the airspace test, okay?
Yes.
And that, as Davis points out, was the common law test. When Nevada's burglary statute was enacted in 1911, airspace probably made a lot of sense because every house probably looked the same, four walls, a roof, a door. But now you've got all these buildings that have, you know, retractable roofs, awnings, you know, whatever, you know, architecture designing things where houses don't look alike. So the reason California's rejected the airspace test is because it doesn't apply to those structures with retractable things, movable things, you know, those kinds of things. So what are you proposing here? What's the principle why we should find that this is not a burglary versus, and, you know, breaking into someone's home through their door is a burglary? What's the difference legally?
The difference legally is we still have to go back to the common law and why the burglary statute was criminalized. In common law, as we know, it was a dwelling. It had to be at night because the thought was that that was when the resident was most vulnerable. Although we've changed the statute, we still haven't changed the rationale behind it. We want people to be safe. When people enter and they're uninvited, we don't know what can happen. It can be a very dangerous or violent situation. Additionally, however, we also want to protect the possessory interest of the business. We don't want individuals being able to go in and steal items. Here, none of those things occurred. And I think that if we look to our own statute, NRS 193.0145, we can look at the definition of what enter is. And in that definition, our legislature has indicated that entry is specifically either entering a portion of your body through a building or entering actually into a building or having an instrument in which you use to threaten or intimidate someone or detach or remove property. None of those things happened here. I think what is very telling is that in the instant case, this Easy Pawn business was closed. The business was actually closed. And when the business is closed, that is when this drive-up window can be operated. And so the very design of this tray is so that people cannot get in. You cannot enter. I know that the record is a little bit not as illustrative as we would like to talk about the design of the tray, but Mr. Yazzie testified that it was like going to a bank. And I think that's why the Davis case should be the case that this court looks to, even though it's from our sister state. There, when the defendant presented the forged check through the bank chute, the court found that there was no entry. But what is significant here is that if you think about this tray, you think about the way that it slides out, it's designed to prevent entry. It's designed to prevent access to the employees, the store, the goods within the store. There is like a back portion of the tray, and that's closed to the outside public. When you go to a CVS pharmacy or when you go to a bank that has the glass right there, you can't access the side that they're on. All you can do is access that tray. And furthermore, here, based upon sufficiency of the evidence, the state's own witness never even testified that Ms. Molino placed her hand on the tray. How many times have you gone to a CVS pharmacy or been at a bank teller with the glass and you simply tossed your items on the tray?
But something entered. I mean, whether her hand entered, whether her product entered. If you go back to it, let's take it away from the tray instance for a second. Let's say it's a door, okay? Even if my hand doesn't go in the door, if I use a tool to reach in through the door and grab something from your house, like with one of those fishy things that, you know, that you can open and close the mouth, and I grab your wallet out from your door using that. My hand never entered, but I used something to enter the door, an instrument. How is that not a burglary? Does it matter what entered so long as something entered?
Well, here, We have to look at NRS 193.0145. That actually defines what enter means, and it says that when enter is an element of a particular statute, as it is here in burglary, that entry is defined as either the entrance of the offender. We know Ms. Moreno didn't go in that business because it was closed. It's defined as the insertion of any body part of the offender. The record is silent that she inserted any body part or
Isn't section. That really a factual question for the jury, though? I mean, under instruction number 23, quote, an entry is deemed complete, however slight, any portion of the intruder's body penetrates the space within the building. The jury was instructed on that exactly, and they made a factual determination despite your claims that there's nothing in the record that would actually state that the hand went into the tray. They were instructed regarding a body part, and they found her guilty. That's really a factual determination by the jury.
I think that the court has to look to Casillon v. State, which is 108 Nevada 67, and Ewish v. State, which is 110 Nevada 221. And under the standard of sufficiency for evidence, it's whether the jury acting reasonably could have been convinced beyond a reasonable doubt. The facts of this record.
So is instruction 23 accurate? Any portion of the intruder's body penetrates the space within the building, then there's a burglary. So is that, first of all, a correct statement of the law? And then second, did any part of Ms. Moreno's body penetrate the building?
I think that jury instruction somewhat misstates NRS 193.0145, but under NRS 193.0145, entry is defined as insertion of any part of the offender.
Well, except that there's another clause here which you're ignoring. NRS 193.0145 says any part of the body or any instrument held in the offender's hand and used or intended to be used to detach or remove property.
Well, Your Honor, here, it also says the instrument has to either be used to threaten or intimidate. Ms. Moreno didn't threaten or intimidate anyone, and she did not detach any property. That would go to the cases that the state cited, State v. Crease, where individuals are taking off windows. That's detaching property. Now, I want to point the court's attention to the state's logic and what this would end up. The laws are supposed to not allow for ridiculous results. And if you follow the state's logic here, basically what you're saying is that if anything is affixed to a building, it is therefore part of a building, and that if you touch a portion of that, then that is an entry. Take, for example, if you have a flower box that is attached to a windowsill on the side of a home. If a person reaches in and grabs a flower out of that flower box, that is now a home burglary, a residential burglary. If you return libraries and you just drop them off in a book drop box and your hands or nothing touches the inside of that, are you now saying that that's an entry into the library because it's either attached to the library building or fixed to the library building? If you, for example, as the Davis case talked about, if you slid a ransom note under the door, is that now an entry because the person slid the note and caused it to enter the other side of the building?
And what if I throw a hand grenade in there? I mean, we can play with a million facts here, but the issue is, you know, the jury gets to decide, well, which of these things is dangerous and which is not. You know, you keep talking about these innocuous things, but some things are dangerous. A hand grenade, a bomb, you know, an envelope full of anthrax. Why wouldn't that be a burglary then?
Well, there was nothing dangerous in this case, though.
Right. But generally, we're talking about the test here is the issue. I mean, you can play with innocuous things or dangerous things. Does it matter?
And obviously, in the dissent in Davis, they're talking about that check being an instrument to defraud. Instead of the hand going in there to take money, that was a fictitious check, completely fictitious. And they used that check, that instrument, to get money out of, you know, that check-cashing place. And so, of course, they're saying that the entry occurs, the instrumentality is that check, that the burglar puts the instrumentality in there and is able to commit larceny by doing that.
I would submit to this court that the California statute is broader than our own statute here. The definition of entry, when you're speaking of an instrument, says that, one, the defendant or the offender has to actually be holding that instrument, and it has to be used to threaten or intimidate or detach or remove property. So it's not just causing something to enter a building. You either have to be using that instrument to remove property, detach property, threaten or intimidate. So their case law and their statute is broader, and even under that broader standard, they found that there was no entry here. So I don't believe that causing an instrument to be on the other side is sufficient for an entry. And if we look at the facts of this case, arguably, Ms. Molino did not cause the jury to be placed on the other side. It was the actions of Mr. Yazzie, the store employee, who actually had to pull that tray back. Had he not made any actions, then the jury would have never entered that building. Additionally, when we're looking at things like this, this sliding tray can break. Say a ball-bearing mechanism or something inside of it breaks. You're going to take it to the shop to get it fixed. There's nothing wrong with the building. You're not going to shut down business. Business still operates as usual. The building is still intact. And that's the difference here. That's why we simply cannot say that if something is affixed to a building and you put your hand inside or touch it, that that is an entry. And I think that looking back to Smith versus First Judicial Court, the court found there placing your hand over that open bed of a truck is not an entry. By placing your hand over the open bed of the truck, you can't enter the cab. And similar to the Davis case, similar to this case where there's something blocking entry in the side of the store, that back of the cab, the back of the truck is blocking entry for your hand to go into the cab.
So let me ask you this. The case that the pickup truck...
Hold on a second. Do you want to save any time for rebuttal?
Sorry.
Yes, Your Honor, please.
Okay, because we're down to 1 minute.
I would like to reserve it this time.
All right. Can we hold off on that one?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Bells and Ms. Bajala. Okay. And both Judge Silver and I have asked about that one jury instruction, so hopefully you'll be able to comment on that one, too.
Instruction 23?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor. Yeah. Good morning, judges, Chief Justice Givens, Judge Abby Silver, and Judge Jerome Tao. My name is Colleen Baharab, and I represent the respondent, the State of Nevada, in the case State of Nevada versus Carrie Molino. I was able to listen to some of your questions during the questioning of my esteemed colleague over here, and I did want to address Instruction 23. One of the issues in the essence of burglary is whether or not there's actually entry, and I believe that that is the exact issue that was raised by appellant. In that case, in that Instruction 23, which is in line with NRS, I believe, 193.0145, it indicates that any entry, no matter how slight, can constitute a burglary. The cases that we use to cite for that...
Well, let me ask the same question I asked her, okay? One of the things that Davis discusses when he traces to the history of common law burglary is there's actually multiple tests. The airspace test, the possessory interest test, the dangerousness test. Yes. You're using an airspace test here. Why? What Nevada case says that that's the test that we use?
At this point, Your Honor, there isn't a Nevada case that indicates that the airspace test is something that we use. The definition that we have for entry is in NRS 193.0145. Mm-hmm. With regards to whether or not the Davis case related to the airspace test, I would note for Your Honors that in Davis, the Attorney General for that particular state indicated that there was no entry of that chute, and the Davis court relied upon that decision by the Attorney General to concede no entry in deciding that there's no way that that forged check passing through that chute could operate as an instrument to conduct a burglary. The reason in this case the state proceeded with this particular charge is that our understanding of that particular implement, that window that was, I guess, akin to a CVS or you can akin it to a bank, was that it was at least partially enclosed and or connected to that building. And by very function of placing items into that particular structure and or taking out the money as a result of the pawn going through, that one had to enter into that building no matter how slight.
So, let me ask you, when you look at State versus White, which is our Nevada Supreme Court decision, which came out a couple months after this case was decided as well, our Nevada Supreme Court stated, quote, The burglary laws are not intended necessarily to deter the trespass or the intended crimes. And here, obviously, we have an intended crime. But are aimed at the danger caused by the unauthorized entry itself. The statute protects against intruders coming into indoor areas. And that's end of quote. Indoor areas.
Right.
So how do you reconcile indoor areas from the Nevada Supreme Court's own mouth, words, to this case when we're talking about indoor areas?
In Smith, it's my understanding that, and counsel addressed this, that the problem was that the defendant just placed the hand over the outside of the truck and did take something from that.
No, that's not that case. This is the case where they changed it where you can't burglarize your own home.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, and so that was decided a couple months after this. And I understand factually the difference, obviously, of that case and just finding no burglary in that type of situation, domestic situation. But the language out of the Supreme Court talks about, quote, the burglary laws are aimed at danger caused by unauthorized entry itself. It says the statute protects against intruders coming into, quote, indoor areas. So now looking at what our Supreme Court has stated in White versus the facts in this case, how do you reconcile the two?
Thank you for pointing out that the case I had was different, Your Honor. With regards to that case, the White case that just came out, my understanding the facts of that case related to somebody burglarizing their own home. Our Supreme Court in that case came in line with California, which determined, I believe in the 70s, that one cannot burglarize their own home because they have a possessory interest in that home. In this case, there is not a possessory interest by appellant in the Easy Pawn. And with regards to whether or not someone is actually entering that particular structure, I would liken it to what counsels or what the judge was indicating earlier, that now we have a lot of different architecture. We have things where people have retractable roofs and all sorts of things of that nature. So our statute in Nevada is broader, I disagree with counsel, than the statute in California. In Nevada, you can be convicted of burglarizing a room, an apartment, a tenement, a railroad car, a car, any sort of structure that is, you know, not belonging to you, obviously, with now regards to the White case. In this particular case, Your Honor, the facts that came out before the jury that the state understands in our review of the record is that structure is an extension, that tray is an extension of the structure. And Mr. Yazzie did testify, he indicated that tray goes out a little ways. He did state that it can extend fully, but I would note for the court that he did not specifically recall Ms. Merlino's transaction on October 24th, 2011. He was unable to say whether or not she had to get out of the car to place items in the tray, whether or not she had to put her hand in there. But what he did note is the way that structure works, which is it comes out a little bit of ways.
Well, let me ask you this. You keep saying that the premise of your argument is that tray is part of the structure. Now, I'm not sure this is a perfect analogy because the legislature can define statutes differently. But if we were to look at real estate law, if this building were sold, that tray wouldn't be part of the building. It would be what's called a fixture under real estate law, right? So if that's what real estate law considers it to be, how is that part of the building?
At this point in time, it's connected to the building, and yes, it is a fixture. You're correct. But there is a wall with regards to that particular structure, and I believe Mr. Yazzie was testifying about that. Unfortunately, the state nor appellant did not provide an explanation of what gestures were being provided by Mr. Yazzie while he was testifying. And that's why Your Honors are correct. The jury is in the unique position to determine whether or not an entry occurred because that jury was able to determine the testimony and the gestures that were being made. In this particular case, Your Honor, that tray is flush with the wall of the building. So if that structure comes out, or I'm sorry, that fixture, as you're going to call it, comes out a little bit of ways so that a person can put property into that particular tray, and there is a possibility that a person has crossed the threshold of that building by function of putting the items in the tray and or taking items out of that tray. The state's position when we went to trial on this case with regards to arguing for the conviction on this particular charge was that it was entry no matter how slight. And based upon the testimony as it came out, it appeared to the state that there had been an entry, even if it was slight, by any portion of Ms. Merlino's body when she either put the jewelry on the tray or took the money and or the tickets out of the tray.
Okay. So looking at that, using instruction 23 then, that's what you're saying. There was any portion of the intruder's body penetrates the space within the building. So you're saying the tray is the building, and we're using the space test. Ms. Bell said that there was no penetration of that space. And she said the Davis case is fairly close. It's like sliding something under the door.
And that was the argument that appellant made at the time of trial to that jury as well. That was made during their closing arguments, that there could not have been an entry into that building. However, the state submitted in both its first closing and its rebuttal that there had, in fact, been some sort of entry by Ms. Marino based upon the gestures of Mr. Yazzie, as well as the very function of the fact that the tray, we were told.
And the entry is what? Putting her hand an inch into the tray?
No, we believe they crossed the threshold of that building.
But I thought you said the tray extends out from the building.
There was testimony regarding that.
The brief on appeal talks about the state's proposition. Of course, the hand went into the tray over and over, but the hand went into the tray.
And it did. And it's the state's understanding that when the hand went into the tray, the hand also crossed the threshold of that particular
building. But you said the witness didn't even remember the situation.
He did not. So he was explaining how the normal course of action would have to work.
So if the tray comes out and she dropped whatever the property was into the tray and her hand didn't go into the tray, is that still an entry?
That would have been a completely different factual scenario.
But we don't know because the witness didn't say that he saw her hand go into the tray.
Right, he could not. But what he did testify is that jewelry had to actually come inside that tray, and that when a person has to sign the pawn ticket, they actually have to take it out if it's windy, or they might sign it right there. So based upon the facts that came out, our arguments in closing and my review.
They'd have to actually put their hand in the tray, take it, the thing out, and sign it. So at some point, presumably, or one could infer from the facts that you would have to at least put the hand in to sign off on the pawn ticket.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And that's the argument that we made at the time of trial. Your Honor is correct, though, and that brings me back to the Davis case, which you brought up before the parties. In the Davis case, the Attorney General in that case admitted that there had been no entry at all of any body part of that particular defendant into any portion of that particular building, including that particular shoe. In this case, the state submits to the court, based upon the record and the testimony of the witnesses, that there necessarily had to have been some sort of entry onto that tray in obviously crossing the plane of the building to have supported our charge of burglary in this
case. Is that the best statement of the law? Judge Sully was asking before about the dangerousness and the case, the recent case of White. Do you think we're going in a different direction now in Nevada?
In terms of changing the burglary statute?
Well, not changing it, clarifying it.
Yes. In terms of clarifying it, I think that there has been jurisprudence lately that has modified the interpretation that we've been using for the law, yes.
For entry? And if so, what Nevada case talks about entry?
Not entry.
And definition of entry?
Not entry, Your Honor. I apologize. In terms of someone's ability to commit burglary in a structure that they own. With regards to entry, I have not been able to see a case like that. And admittedly, I received this information yesterday, so I would file supplemental points and authorities. But we have been going on the premise that any entry, no matter how slight, of a person's body part constitutes entry. And that's codified in NRS 193.
But we are moving away. We talked about CVS, and certainly anyone that drives up to Walgreens or CVS knows that one window's a tray, one's a chute. What's going to be the difference in the future when we're talking about what's a burglary?
And just Judge Tao brought up the idea of the open air or the air rule. And I guess that's going to have to be the question. In People versus Davis, that court was concerned about what would constitute an entry. And that would, of course, be a factual determination by the jury. The jury is in a unique position to have that testimony before them, as well as the photographs and any gestures that would have been brought before them to determine whether a threshold had been crossed.
Well, how did the court in Davis then reverse? Now, it was a 4-3 decision. I thought you were implying the Attorney General conceded some type of error, but there were three dissenters, so
yes.
That concession couldn't have gone that far, because three of them still voted to
appeal. And the one, what was interesting, the one judge was a justice of the peace that happened to just go out there and make that determining 4-3 vote.
Well,
so obviously, at least three of the justices and three of the justices felt very strongly each side.
So what? That was reversed. How do you explain that then?
In my review of the dissent, and that's actually the three cases I was planning to supplement for Your Honors, the dissent indicated that in this particular case, first and foremost, that the description of the sheet was vague. I will submit to the court that that's exactly the case here. The description of our sheet is vague. We don't have a measurement about how far it comes out, how a person would necessarily have to place their hands in there, stuff like that. However, based upon the trial testimony, the dissenter indicated that the jury could have concluded beyond a reasonable doubt the defendant put his hand inside the chute. And that's the argument the state's making. There necessarily, in this case, had to have been an entry into the chute.
When we're looking at the Davis case, and obviously we pointed several times to the Davis case, why should we obviously go with a dissent in that case? And that would be obviously the state's position that the dissent was actually correct. Those three justices and their analysis. Why is that the better analysis for Nevada on entry?
Nevada is a unique state, and I keep using the word unique, but we have many things here that a lot of states don't have. We have a proliferation of pawn shops. We have a proliferation of restaurant, drive-through restaurants open 24 hours a day. We have hotel rooms. We have stores, things that are open a lot longer and have different points of entry than a lot of other states tend to have. I would submit to the court that in Nevada, entry can be through a drive-through window or through a chute because those are the very mechanisms used after hours for people to commit those types of crimes. And the dissent in Davis indicated that a person could use any sort of item to go in and steal money out of a cash register. And I know appellant indicated that there are some, you know, several situations where it could get to a point where we're just getting far afield and being ridiculous, but I don't think that that's the case in this particular instance, Your Honor. What we have is a person admittedly going to an Easy Pawn and conducting a pawn transaction. Ms. Merlino testified that herself on her own direct examination. We have her pawning items that the jury determined did not belong to her. We have her committing and obtaining money under false pretenses. The very reason that she went through the drive-thru, the state can infer from the facts, is that the inside just happened to be closed at that particular point. So we don't criminalize conduct where people are now using a drive-thru to facilitate the possession of stolen property or the
presence. Well, you're criminalizing. You're criminalizing the act of the larceny, ultimately.
Right.
We're just talking about burglary.
You get two felonies instead of one felony.
Right. We are criminalizing, clearly, the act of what goes on with the defrauding, but specifically, why the added charge of burglary in light of what we've discussed, and also with White talking about going into an indoor area. They use those terms.
And it goes back to dangerousness, which is what your Justice, Your Honor, was concerned about. Is it dangerous for a person to go to a drive-thru window after hours?
What if it wasn't after hours? What if it's 5 o'clock at night? CVS's and Walgreens use them all day long.
And I would submit to the court that we have many cases in Nevada where people are... I'm sorry,
go ahead.
Answer your question.
Go ahead.
Many cases in Nevada where people are the victims of crimes through those particular drive-thru, whether it's robbery or something like that. We don't have that violence in this particular case. What we do have is someone utilizing property that doesn't belong to them to gain money from a business that they're not entitled to. So we submit to the court that the entry, even if it was slight, was sufficient, and the jury found it to be sufficient to convict Ms. Merlino of count 5 burglary.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you,
Ms. Bajara. All right, Ms. Bells, you have a brief rebuttal?
Very brief, Your Honor. Mm-hmm.
The state indicates that the facts of the case are vague. However, it is the state's responsibility to prove every material element of the crime charged beyond a reasonable doubt. It is not the defense's job to assist them or help them or prove the case. Their witness did not testify that Ms. Merlino placed her hand there. Even if she took those pawn tickets out, she could have just simply slid them up. That doesn't mean that she touched the particular tray. And even if she did, that's not an entry into the building because it's not a building. It is a fixture.
Let me ask you a policy question. If we say this is not a burglary, aren't we telling every thief out there, hey, go to the drive-up window instead of going into the building? And why would we want to do that?
We're not telling every thief to just go through the drive-up window. I don't believe that many of the criminals read the decisions of the court.
We get a lot of motions for rehearing.
Additionally, however, as the court just stated, that particular individual is still going to be charged with another felony, obtaining money under false pretenses. May I finish my sentence?
Sorry
or something of another.
Okay.
If there are no additional questions, I would submit.
Well, I was wondering, what are you seeking here, other than obviously a reversal? But is it a reversal with a remand, with a different jury instruction, or is it a statement as a matter of law that this is not burglary?
the statement as a matter of law that on this particular count, it is not burglary because a reasonable jury could not have inferred from the evidence put forth that there was an entry.
So it essentially would have to be that instruction 23 is wrong because it incorporates the space test, and we'd be using more of a danger test or one, something else that was mentioned in the Davis case.
Yes, and we would specifically cite to our own entry statute and make sure that the jury instruction is verbatim.
Right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. Both counsel did an excellent job. We much, very much appreciate it. It's kind of unusual to have an argument when there's only one of the verdicts that's at issue in the trial, not everything in the trial. So this made it very
good. We didn't know how we were going to fill up the time, but we sure did, didn't we?
So again, we very much appreciate it. This matter will stand submitted for further deliberations, awaiting a written decision.